A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about the shipping container revolution and whether we could do the same thing for home storage. Standardized bins, standardized racks, everything modular and interoperable. Has anyone actually tried this? And if not, what would the right sizes be? Honestly, this is the kind of question that makes me look at my own closet and feel personally attacked.
Your closet is a crime scene. But the question is better than most people realize. The shipping container, ISO 668, established 1968, standardized global trade around a 20-foot and 40-foot box, 8 feet wide, 8 foot 6 high. Before that, cargo was loaded piece by piece, every ship different, every port its own chaos. Longshoremen would spend days hand-stacking crates of bananas next to barrels of olive oil next to bolts of fabric. And a single ship might carry 10,000 individually wrapped items. Containerization cut shipping costs by something like 90%. And then you walk into a Home Depot and there are 47 incompatible bin brands, none of which stack properly with each other.
The garage version of the Tower of Babel. You buy a Sterilite bin in 2019, and by 2022, the lid design has changed just enough that nothing seals. And it's not just the lid. The footprint shifts by half an inch, so last year's bins don't stack on this year's without wobbling like a Jenga tower.
That's not an accident. The U.S. home storage container market was valued at $8.2 billion in 2025, according to Fredonia Group Research. 70% of those sales are non-interoperable brands. Every manufacturer wants you locked into their ecosystem. It's the printer ink model applied to plastic rectangles. You buy the bin, and then 3 years later when you need more, you either hunt eBay for discontinued models, or throw out everything you own and start over with a new brand.
Which I have done. I'm ashamed to admit it, but I've done it. An entire weekend, two trips to the dump, because Rubbermaid changed the latch design on their 20-gallon tote. The old ones and the new ones technically stacked, but if you looked at them wrong, they'd slide apart. So, the market has actively chosen fragmentation, which means we need to understand what standardization would even look like before we can ask why it hasn't happened.
So let's start with the geometry problem. What are the physical constraints that define optimal consumer storage sizes? Because you can't just pick numbers out of the air. They have to work with what people actually store, and with the spaces people actually have.
With a human body. A box that's too deep becomes a black hole, too wide and you can't carry it when it's full. I'm thinking of those enormous underbed bins that are 40 inches long. Sure, they hold wrapping paper perfectly, but when they're full of books, they require two people and a furniture dolly.
So the first constraint is reach depth. Most household shelving is between 12 and 16 inches deep. That's not random, it's roughly the length of an adult forearm. Any deeper and you're losing things in the back. You reach in, your shoulder hits the shelf above, and whatever you're looking for has migrated to the back corner where it will remain until the heat death of the universe. The second constraint is the standard stud bay. In North American construction, wall studs are 16 inches on center, which gives you about 14.5 inches of cavity width. In much of Europe, it's 60 centimeters on center, roughly 23.6 inches. Neither of these aligns with anything you buy at the container store.
The architecture of the house itself is already incompatible with the storage products sold for it. The walls are saying one thing and the bins are saying another, and nobody bothered to introduce them.
It gets worse. The third constraint is the pallet. The U.S. standard GMA pallet is 48 by 40 inches. The European EUR pallet is 1200 by 800 millimeters. That's roughly 47.2 by 31.5 inches. They differ by about 1.6 inches in width. If you're designing a box that's meant to be palletized for moving or storage, you have to pick one standard or the other, and they don't divide neatly into each other. Imagine trying to design a board game that works on both a chessboard and a go board. The grids don't align, and no amount of cleverness makes them align.
Even at the industrial level, we have two incompatible standards coexisting, and any consumer system has to deal with both. That's already a mess before we bought a single bin. And it's not like one of these is going to win. The GMA palette and the EUR palette have coexisted for decades, and neither is going anywhere.
Now let's talk about what actually exists. There are three major de facto standards in consumer storage right now, and none of them talk to each other. First, the US standard 18-gallon tote. This is your classic Sterilite, Rubbermaid, roughly 23 by 16 by 18 inches. It's everywhere. You can buy one at any hardware store in America. It's also completely incompatible with standardized shelving. A typical garage shelf is 48 inches wide. You can fit two of these totes side by side, but you'll have about 2 inches of wasted space. Stack them, and the lids don't interlock across brands. The Rubbermaid lid has a raised ridge that doesn't fit the recessed groove on the Sterilite base. They're speaking different dialects of the same language.
2 inches of air. Multiplied across every shelf in every garage in America, that's an astonishing amount of wasted cubic footage. If you added it all up, you'd probably have enough volume to store the entire population of Nebraska's seasonal decorations.
It's the 1-inch gap problem, and it compounds. The second de facto standard is the Euro container system, 400 by 300 millimeters and 600 by 400 millimeters. Companies like Racco and Sortimo make these. They're brilliant for tools and small parts. Automotive technicians swear by them. Walk into any German auto shop and you'll see walls of these things, each one labeled, each one holding exactly the right set of bolts or gaskets. But they're designed for industrial drawers, not for storing sweaters and kitchen equipment. The aspect ratios are wrong for household goods. A 400 by 300 millimeter box is great for socket wrenches, terrible for a stack of dinner plates. Plates are round and roughly 10 to 11 inches across. You put them in a 400 millimeter box, and you've got awkward gaps on all sides.
The Euro container solves the interoperability problem, but fails on the what do humans actually put in boxes problem. It's a beautiful system for a world where everyone is a Mercedes mechanic.
And then there's IKEA. The Cowex shelving unit uses a 33 centimeter cube that's about 13 inches. The SAMLA storage box line is 55 by 39 by 28 centimeters, roughly 22 by 15 by 13 inches. The SAMLA box does not fit cleanly into the Kallax cube. They're both IKEA products. Different design teams that apparently never had lunch together. If you buy a Kallax shelf and then go to the same store and buy SAMLA bins to put in it, you will stand in your living room at 11 p.m. surrounded by Allen wrenches and existential despair.
The left hand not knowing what the left hand is doing. A single company can't even standardize internally, and IKEA is the one company on earth with the scale and the vertical integration to actually pull this off. They design the furniture. They manufacture the bins. They control the retail channel. If they can't do it, who can?
That's the indictment. And this brings us to the core physical question. What is the right base unit? I want to propose something, and you can poke holes in it.
I keep a sharpened stick just for this purpose.
1 cubic foot. A 12 by 12 by 12 cube, I'm going to call this the domestic modular unit, or DMU. Base module is DMU1. Then, everything scales by integer multiples. DMU2 is 24 by 12 by 12, same footprint as two DMU1s side by side, but half the height. DMU4 is 24 by 24 by 12. DMU8 is 24 by 24 by 24, a 2-foot cube. Racks are designed around these dimensions with zero wasted space.
Why 12 inches? Why not 10? Or the 13-inch Kallax cube? Because I can already hear someone saying 10 is a rounder number.
First, 12 inches divides evenly into almost every standard shelf width. A 36-inch closet rod, 3 12-inch bins fit perfectly. A 48-inch shelf, a 60-inch entertainment center, the math is trivial. 10 inches would give you awkward remainders. 3 10-inch bins in a 36-inch space leave 6 inches of gap. Second, 12 inches is the smallest practical dimension for most household goods. Books are typically 8 to 10 inches tall. A dinner plate is 10 to 11 inches in diameter. A folded sweater is about 12 by 10. You can fit almost anything into a 12-inch cube, but it's not so large that you're wasting space for smaller items. A 10-inch cube would be too short for a standard hardcover book. you'd have to lay books flat, which is a crime against bookkind.
The 13-inch KLX? That 1 inch of difference matters that much?
It's catastrophic for interoperability. A 13-inch cube doesn't divide evenly into anything. 36 divided by 13 is 2.77. You can fit two KLX cubes in a 36-inch space, but not three. A 48-inch shelf? Three KLX cubes leave 9 inches of waste. That 1 inch difference creates cascading incompatibility with every standard bin on the market, which are overwhelmingly 12-inch based. The Container Store's modular line uses 12-inch cubes. Most wire shelving is designed around 12-inch increments. IKEA made a choice that optimized for their own aesthetic and effectively walled off their garden. And here's the thing, I don't think it was malicious. I think some designer said, 33 centimeters looks nice, and nobody did the downstream math.
IKEA's 13-inch cube is the Betamax of home storage. Technically fine, strategically isolated. And like Betamax, it'll probably have a small cult following forever, while the rest of the world moves on.
The market has noticed. There was a Kickstarter in 2024 called ModuBox, a 12-inch cube system with interlocking lids and stackable design, raised $2.3 million. But it failed to achieve interoperability with existing rack systems because, by the time they shipped, most backers had already bought shelving that didn't match. The lesson, a standard only works if the ecosystem adopts it simultaneously. You can't retrofit modularity onto an installed base of incompatible furniture.
Which is exactly the chicken and egg problem that the shipping container faced. Nobody wanted to build container ships until there were containers, and nobody wanted to build containers until there were container ships. Malcolm McLean had to build the whole thing himself. He bought a shipping company, converted the ships, built the containers, and basically dared the ports to catch up.
The ISO container standard only happened because it was mandated. The U.S. military required standardized containers for logistics during the Vietnam War. They were shipping supplies to Saigon and Da Nang, and the chaos of mixed cargo was literally costing lives. Medical supplies buried under spare tires, ammunition crates that didn't fit on trucks. The military said, enough, and wrote a standard. The shipping lines, led by Malcolm McLean's Sealand, pushed it through the ISO because the efficiency gains were so enormous that no single company could capture them alone. The standard was essentially forced on the industry by the biggest players, and then everyone benefited.
Who's the U.S. military of home storage? Who has the market power to mandate a DMU standard?
That's the trillion-dollar question. Realistically, there are maybe three candidates. IKEA, if they decided to align KLX with a 12-inch standard and make SAMLA actually fit. The Home Depot, or Lowe's, if they mandated that all storage products sold in their stores use compatible dimensions. Or Amazon, if they launched an Amazon Basics storage line built around the DMU and used their market share to squeeze everyone else into line.
None of which seems likely, because the incentives all run the other direction. IKEA wants you in the IKEA ecosystem. That's the whole business model. Home Depot makes money whether your bins match or not. They just want shelf space turnover. And Amazon Basics is more likely to copy the most popular existing size than to invent a standard from scratch. They're a fast follower, not a standard setter.
Which is why we're in the world we're in. But let me push on something. Let's say a standard did emerge. What are the knock-on effect? Because this isn't just about tidier closets.
The moving industry. You mentioned the pallet problem earlier.
The average American moves 11.7 times in their lifetime, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Each move involves buying cardboard boxes, packing everything into non-standard sizes, loading them onto a truck, and then reversing the process at the other end. It's incredibly wasteful. And the waste isn't just the cardboard, it's the time. The average move takes something like 40 hours of packing and unpacking. Now imagine a world where the DMU standard is widely adopted. Your belongings are already in DMU 8 cubes, 2-foot cubes that fit 4 to a layer on a standard 48 by 40-inch pallet. When you move, you don't repack anything. You stack your cubes on pallets, the movers load them with a pallet jack, and they arrive at your new home already organized. You go from box fort chaos to fully unpacked in the time it takes to roll pallets off a truck.
The entire moving industry transforms from a packing and transport business to a transport-only business, which is faster, cheaper, and radically less wasteful. The cardboard box industry probably hates this idea. But think about the downstream effects. Moving becomes so much cheaper and less stressful that people might actually move more often or more easily relocate for jobs. It could change labor mobility.
They should hate it. But consumers would save thousands of dollars per move and an incalculable amount of stress. And it goes beyond moving. Think about seasonal storage. Right now, if you put your winter clothes in bins and stack them in the garage, retrieval is a nightmare. The bin you need is always at the bottom of a stack that's slightly too tall and wedged behind something else. With a DMU system and compatible racking, every cube is accessible without unstacking. You pull it out like a drawer. The rack becomes a giant filing cabinet for your life.
The cost of a touch problem. We talked about that in a previous episode. The hidden overhead of retrieving anything from disorganized storage. If retrieval is frictionless, you actually use what you own. You don't buy a second fondue set because the first one is buried behind the camping gear and you forgot you had it.
And there's a third order effect I want to flag. If the DMU became a real standard, it would unlock a wave of third-party accessories. Dividers, drawer inserts, label holders, humidity sensors, stackable trays. All designed to fit inside a 12-inch cube. Right now, organizing products are fragmented across a dozen incompatible ecosystems. You buy a drawer divider from one brand, and it doesn't fit the bin from another brand. Standardize the container, and the accessory market explodes. You get the equivalent of the iPhone App Store, but for plastic rectangles.
The benefits are enormous and obvious, which brings us back to the practical question. What can someone actually do about this today, without waiting for IKEA to see the light?
First, measure your available space in multiples of 12 inches. A 36-inch closet gets 3 12-inch bins. A 48-inch shelf gets 4. If you have a 34-inch space, accept that you'll have some waste and use a filler, or better yet, don't buy shelving in odd dimensions. Design around the standard from the start. The moment you commit to 12-inch thinking, a lot of decisions get easier.
What products actually conform to this now?
The Container Store's modular line is built around a 12-inch cube. It's not perfect. The lids aren't designed for the kind of heavy stacking you'd want in a garage, but for closet and pantry use, it's solid. Some of the really useful box line from the UK uses dimensions that are close to 12-inch multiples, though they're metric underneath. 300 millimeters is 11.8 inches, close enough for most purposes. And if you're willing to pay more, Sortimo's T-Box system uses a 400 by 300 millimeter base, which doesn't align with 12 inches, but does align with Euro containers if you're already in that ecosystem.
There's no perfect off-the-shelf DMU system, but you can get close if you're deliberate about it. It's like building a home theater. You can't just buy random components and hope they work together. You have to plan the whole thing.
This is where the maker community comes in. If you have a 3D printer, you can design and print dividers, trays, and organizers that fit whatever bin you've standardized on. The STL files for DMU-compatible inserts barely exist right now. That's a gap someone could fill. A set of parametric files where you input your bin's interior dimensions and it generates dividers. That would be genuinely useful. You'd type in 12 by 12 by 12, and it would spit out a customizable grid of dividers. Anyone listening who knows OpenSCAD, this is your moment.
The standard only works if the ecosystem supports it. And the ecosystem starts with people sharing designs. A dozen good STL files on printables could do more for home storage standardization than a decade of corporate strategy meetings.
Let me address two misconceptions that always come up when I talk about this. First, the idea that standardization would limit creativity and choice. The shipping container didn't limit ship design, it enabled it. Before containers, ships were all basically the same, holds with hatches. After containers, you got cellular container ships, roll-on roll-off ships, specialized reefers. The standard freed designers to innovate on everything around the container. A DMU standard would do the same for home storage. Manufacturers could compete on lid design, material, color, handle ergonomics, divider systems, weather sealing, while still being interoperable. You could have a premium bin with a gasketed lid for garage use, and a cheap open-top bin for pantry use, and they'd still stack together because the footprint is the same.
The standard becomes the platform, not the product. Nobody complains that USB limits creativity in peripherals. You can buy a USB-powered lava lamp, a USB fan, a USB mug warmer. The connector is standardized, and that standardization is what makes all the weird stuff possible.
The second misconception is that homes are too irregular for standard modules. And sure, if you live in a 19th century brownstone with weird angles and alcoves, not every wall is going to accept a perfect grid of 12-inch cubes. But that's what filler pieces are for. The shipping industry uses dunnage, basically inflatable bags and foam blocks, to fill gaps around irregular cargo. The home equivalent is a custom-cut shelf filler or a half-width bin. The standard handles 90% of the space. The remaining 10% gets custom treatment, and that's fine. You don't need perfection. You need a system that handles the common case.
90% efficiency is dramatically better than the 0% efficiency most people have now. Most garages are operating at maybe 30% volumetric efficiency. The rest is air and chaos.
There's one more dimension I want to explore. The vertical axis. Most home storage wastes vertical space because shelves are fixed at arbitrary heights. If you standardize on 12-inch tall bins, your shelving should have vertical increments of 12.5 inches, 12 for the bin, half an inch for finger clearance. Adjustable track shelving like Elfa or IKEA's Agat or the newer BoAxel system can be set to these increments, but almost nobody does it deliberately. They set shelves at whatever height feels right, and then their bins don't fit. They've got a 12-inch bin on a 14-inch shelf, and they're stacking things on top of the bin to fill the gap, and suddenly the whole thing is a mess again.
The advice is, when you install adjustable shelving, actually do the math. Count your bins, measure them, and set the shelf heights to match. I can see the home organization influencers furiously taking notes.
You're mocking me, but yes, exactly. The number of people who install a closet system and then discover their storage bins don't fit is staggering. It's the home organization equivalent of buying furniture without measuring the doorway. And the fix is so simple, it's literally third grade arithmetic. Bin height plus half an inch times the number of bins equals shelf spacing. That's it.
I'm not mocking you. I'm mocking the human race, which apparently can't perform basic arithmetic before drilling holes in walls. I have a closet that I installed with great confidence, and exactly one shelf is at the right height. The rest are a monument to my hubris.
Now, let me talk about one existing standard that actually works because it's instructive. The USPS shoebox standard. The Postal Service has a specific size for a shoebox rate. It's roughly 14 by 8 by 5 inches. It's not a DMU multiple, but it's a standard that emerged because the Postal Service mandated it. If you want that rate, you use that box. And because the Postal Service is a monopoly on certain classes of mail, the standard stuck. Every cardboard box manufacturer makes a USPS shoebox. You don't have to wonder if Ulene's version will fit the Postal Service's requirements. It does, because if it didn't, they couldn't sell it as a shoebox.
A mandated standard by a dominant player can work. The question is whether any player in home storage has that kind of leverage. And I think the answer is no, but not for lack of size. It's because home storage is too diffuse. There's no single choke point like the Postal Service has.
I don't think any single retailer does. But I wonder if the moving industry could be the forcing function. Moving companies have a collective interest in standardization. It would make their operations vastly more efficient. If the American Moving and Storage Association endorsed a standard container size, and major van lines started offering discounts for customers who used it, you'd see rapid adoption. Imagine getting a 15% discount on your move just because your stuff is already in DMU-compatible bins. That's a powerful incentive.
The moving industry as the U.S. military of domestic logistics. I like the symmetry. And it makes sense. They're the ones who actually suffer from the fragmentation. Every mover has stories about the weird assortment of boxes and bins they have to deal with. They'd love a world where everything is a predictable cube.
It connects to something larger. We're in an era where housing costs are skyrocketing and living spaces are shrinking. The average new apartment in the U.S. is about 900 square feet, down from over 1,000 in 2010. In cities like New York and San Francisco, it's much smaller. Efficient storage isn't a luxury, it's a necessity for anyone who doesn't want to live in a pile of their own belongings. When your entire apartment is the size of a living room from 1970, every cubic inch counts.
The Marie Kondo Industrial Complex, but with actual engineering behind it. Kondo tells you to discard things until they fit. The DMU approach says, keep what you want, but store it so efficiently that space stops being the constraint.
Kondo's method is about discarding. The DMU is about keeping, but keeping efficiently. Different philosophy, same starting problem. And I think both have their place. You shouldn't keep things you don't need, but for the things you do need, they shouldn't be fighting you for space.
To answer the original prompt directly, yes, people have considered this. The Euro container system is the closest industrial precedent. The 12-inch cube is the closest consumer precedent. But no one has successfully bridged the gap between industrial standardization and consumer home storage. The industrial systems are too narrow in their use cases, and the consumer systems are too fragmented and brand locked.
The sizes I propose, if I were designing the standard from scratch, are the DMU family, 12 by 12 by 12 as the base unit, scaling by integer multiples. 24 by 12 by 12 for long items. 24 by 24 by 12 for flat items like sweaters and documents. 24 by 24 by 24 for bulk storage. Racks designed around these dimensions with zero clearance waste. Lids that interlock across brands. And a pallet compatibility layer that fits 4 DMU-8s on a standard GMA pallet or 3 on a EUR pallet.
4 on a GMA pallet? Let's check the math. A GMA pallet is 48 by 40 inches. 4 24-inch cubes would be 48 by 48. That's 8 inches over on one dimension.
You'd need a 48 by 48 pallet, which doesn't exist in the standard. So, you'd either need a custom pallet size, which defeats the purpose, or you'd accept some overhang, or you'd use DMU-4s flat and stack them in a different configuration. The EUR pallet at 1200 by 800 millimeters works better. 3 24-inch cubes side by side is 72 inches, which is, no, that's way off. Let me redo this.
This is exactly why standards are hard. The math has to actually work, and it has to work in both imperial and metric, and it has to work with pallets that were designed decades ago for completely different purposes. It's a geometry puzzle from hell.
24 inches is about 610 millimeters. A EUR pallet is 1200 by 800 millimeters. So you can fit one DMU-8 lengthwise and one widthwise. That's 610 plus 610, which is 1220 millimeters. 20 millimeters of overhang, manageable but not perfect. Two DMU-8s side by side on the 1200 millimeter axis is 1220 millimeters. On the 800 millimeter axis, one fits with about 190 millimeters to spare. This is why the shipping container standard uses metric and imperial together. Nothing ever divides perfectly. You're always dealing with some fractional remainder that has to be absorbed somewhere.
The dream of a perfectly modular world, dashed against the rocks of actual measurements. It's like trying to tile a floor and discovering the room is 11.7 tiles wide. Something's getting cut.
That's the wrong way to think about it. The goal isn't perfection. The goal is to go from 0% interoperability to maybe 80%. That's the difference between a world where every bin is a unique snowflake and a world where most bins work together most of the time. The shipping container isn't perfect either. There are still corner castings that don't align, twist locks that jam, height variations that cause problems. There are high cube containers and standard containers, and they don't always stack cleanly. But it's good enough to move $50 trillion of goods a year. Good enough beats perfect every time.
The takeaway for listeners isn't wait for the perfect standard. It's adopt a 12-inch base system today and accept that some things won't fit perfectly because the alternative is chaos. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the dramatically better.
And here's what that looks like in practice. When you're buying storage bins, look for ones with a 12-inch or 24-inch dimension in at least one axis. The Container Store Modular 12-inch Cube. The really useful box 300 millimeter series. Even the humble milk crate, which, by the way, is 13 by 13 by 11 inches, annoyingly close to a DMU, but not quite. If you're buying shelving, get adjustable track systems and set the shelf heights to 12.5 inch increments. If you're designing built-in storage, dimension it in multiples of 12 inches. And if you're a 3D printing person, consider designing and sharing DMU compatible organizers. Be the ecosystem you wish to see in the world.
The milk crate thing is going to bother me. Why not 12? What happened in the dairy industry that gave us this one extra inch of incompatibility?
Because milk crates were designed for milk bottles, not for modular storage. The dairy industry settled on dimensions that worked for their specific bottles in the 1950s, and they've never changed. A standard milk bottle at the time was about 4 inches in diameter, and you could fit 3 in a row with some wiggle room, which gave you roughly 13 inches. It's the same story everywhere you look. Legacy dimensions that made sense for one specific use case, fossilized into products that millions of people now use for completely different purposes. The milk crate has become the universal dorm room bookshelf and vinyl record storage unit, but it was never designed for any of that. It's just what was available.
The QWERTY keyboard of home storage, designed for a problem that no longer exists, impossible to change because the installed base is too large. Milk crates are never going to change size now. There are probably more milk crates in American basements than there are in actual dairy operations.
That's the real answer to why standardization hasn't happened. Not because it's technically hard, the math is straightforward. But because the installed base of incompatible products is enormous, the incentives for manufacturers run toward lock-in, and no single player has both the market power and the motivation to force a standard. It's a classic collective action problem. Everyone would benefit from standardization, but no individual company benefits enough to pay the cost of leading the transition.
We'll be living with the 1-inch gap for the foreseeable future. The air gap between bins will haunt our garages for generations.
But awareness is the first step. Every person who measures their closet in 12-inch increments and chooses bins accordingly is casting a vote for interoperability. And if enough people do it, the market will eventually respond. Manufacturers follow demand. If suddenly everyone is asking for 12-inch compatible bins, someone will make them. It might take 10 years, but it'll happen.
Or we could just wait for the U.S. military to get into the home organization business. The Department of Defense issues a standard closet system for all military housing, and suddenly every contractor in America is building to that spec.
Tactical closet systems. I'd buy one. Imagine a Pelican case but for your sweaters. Mil-spec lid gaskets, pressure equalization valve, stackable to 8 units high.
I would absolutely buy a crush-proof, waterproof bin with a pressure valve for my winter coats. That's not even a joke. That's a product I want.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, Soviet scientists in Tajikistan discovered that the platypus's electrolocation ability, sensing electric fields through its bill, operates on principles remarkably similar to how certain optical lenses focus light, essentially making the bill a biological refractive sensor for electrical fields rather than photons. The bill has thousands of specialized receptors that detect the tiny electrical impulses from the muscle contractions of prey, and the arrangement of these receptors creates a three-dimensional field map that the platypus uses to hunt in complete darkness, with its eyes, ears, and nostrils all closed underwater.
A platypus bill is basically a lens for electricity. It's focusing electrical fields the way a camera lens focuses light. That's absurd. Nature is absurd.
Of all places to study, platypus electrolocation.
Of course it was Tajikistan. Where else would you go to study an Australian animal's electrical sensing abilities? The Soviet scientific establishment was truly unconstrained by geography.
The open question I keep coming back to is whether 3D printing and on-demand manufacturing will finally break the standardization logjam. If you can print a custom organizer that fits perfectly into a 12-inch cube, the manufacturer's lock-in strategy stops mattering. The standard becomes a digital file, not a physical product. And that might be how we finally get our domestic container revolution, not from IKEA or Home Depot, but from a million people sharing STL files. The standard wouldn't be a physical product you buy, it would be a geometry you download.
A bottom-up standard, distributed through Thingiverse and printables, instead of a top-down mandate from a corporation. That would be a very 21st century outcome. The revolution will not be retailed. The revolution will be printed.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact and the production.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. And if you've got a weird prompt of your own, send it in. We might spend 45 minutes analyzing it.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.